Spoken, mate.
I haven't thought about flying for a long time. I have dreamed of that moment when I was alone above the clouds for a long time. Have dreamed waking up in a room surrounded in blue and green grass for more years than I could dream of memory. I haven't walked back into the past or scratched on the doors of my origins, where it all came from. To hang up that cape for the last time.
Return to Kent Town 10th Year Anniversary Edition is a revised version of Andean's first poetry book. The book can be purchased from Amazon and it contains numerous additional material.
Spoken Label.
Hi, it's Andean from Spoken Label. Spoken Label was originally set up at the beginning of 2016 and records show it started off really as a one-off podcast chatting to writers, poets and artists. Over time, it became monthly, then weekly, and occasionally nowadays it goes on back to a more regular basis. To date, I've done over 330 sessions and I'm always looking for new poets, writers, artists, singer-songwriters, general interesting creative people to come onto the podcast. You can find this on all the usual networks over Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Podbay, and dozens of others. But it does have a central database of Spoken Label, which is all one word, .bandcamp.com. Obviously now, to help me with the running costs of this podcast, I'm always grateful for any kind of donation to assist me with it. You can even do the donation through the Bandcamp page by putting in a fee to download one of the free podcasts, or send it over to my PayPal to aen1mpo@yahoo.co.uk. My email address again is aen1mpo@yahoo.co.uk. Enjoy the podcast. Take care. Bye.
Spoken Label.
Hey guys, Andean, Spoken Label. Back in the house. Sunday afternoon. It's lovely today, but cold. So, we're over to one of my favourite parts of the world today. And I didn't know this gentleman who I've got with me today actually lives up that way. So, it just goes to show we find out about people. We've got the fantastic Danny McLaughlin with us today. Now, I met Danny back in the last year, when he's been coming to Speak Easy as a regular for a while now. He's a fantastic writer. And he's also done an appearance on my experimental band's DIH and Friends Christmas album with a stunning piece as well. And he doesn't know this yet, but it's been, I've had about 7 comments on that saying that's the strongest track on the album. so it shows. But Danny, obviously, for people who don't know you, buddy, give us a spiel. You give me hints on the pre-record about where you're from originally. So tell us about yourself as a person and what led you to where you are now.
I started life at a very young age over in Liverpool, I have 3 brothers over there. So we came from it was first immigration Irish family. So that influenced us, I think, influenced the kind of literature, you know, James Joyce kind of literature, which we read and the music we listened to. And also, I suppose, like many first immigrant families, gave us a lot of kick and push from parents to kind of move on and try and do something with our lives if we possibly could. I moved over to Manchester way in the 80s, and that was for a job and a woman. The job lasted a little longer. And I finally graduated my way up to the sunny hills of Glossop. I remember reading a newspaper when I moved to Manchester, which said the first snow in England had fallen in Glossop. And I thought, there's no way I'm ever going to live there. So there you go. You can prove yourself wrong in life. And you have to face the usual Mancunian jokes, you know. You come from Liverpool. The River Mersey runs through Liverpool, doesn't it? Well, it has to. Otherwise, it would be mugged, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, God, yeah, completely, mate. Yeah, love Glossop. It's a lovely area. But you're right, when it gets used, I've always had the myth about it, it definitely gets the first snow every time it comes down in this area. And I've been stuck up there a couple of times behind snowplows now. So I know it well, mate. Okay, now, I've met you last year when you started with Speakeasy Regular for your poetry, really. Now, have you been writing? You've given us a hint about James Joyce already. Were you writing as a child, or has it come to you a bit later in life?
Yeah, I think I was writing on and off as a child. I remember winning some kind of competition with some comic way back, you know, when I was very young. I can't remember what I won. I thought it was a radio or something. I'm not sure they provided the batteries, though. And that was probably the start of it. I always enjoyed reading. I enjoyed reading. Started out, as I say, with the usual picture comics, pictorial, but then I moved on. I really liked the words. And I liked to learn new words and try and understand the meanings. So I think that started me very early on, looking at ways of communicating. You know, Philip Pullman, the novelist, has said that after we've dealt with the necessities of life, what's important to us as relational animals is that we actually have stories and we listen to stories. That's what gives us the interconnection one with the other. And I think he's absolutely right on that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely on that one. It does this. No, it's a valid point indeed. So now, what you caught me out with originally was, and I like being caught out as an artist myself, was when you appeared on our Christmas album, This Year Just Gone, was I didn't know this, but you either you or your wife, and I presume it's you, has got a bit of musical element to yourself as well, haven't you? So.
Yeah, I try and play the saxophone, the alto saxophone. So I did start playing this in the 80s. I mean, my schooling was probably like most people's. You know, the only type of musical instrument you had was a recorder, which was dipped in some kind of disinfectant. It's probably no good to your health throughout the years.
True.
And I was a great lover, and I'm a great lover of jazz. So I always wanted to try and imitate some of the jazz greats, people I really liked, like Charlie Parker, John Coltrane. So in the 80s, I tried to take up music, saxophone. I had a guy who was teaching me, who had his own orchestra in the 50s. He's a great, great guy, great raconteur, but he never taught me anything. But we had some great conversations. And I thought this effectively ennobled me. I thought I really liked music more than I ever thought I did. So unfortunately, I couldn't keep it up in the 80s, work over talk at the time. So since in the last 5 years, I've tried to go back to it and pick it up. And again, I just want to be able to play away my feelings. So I do play with a few other people. My eldest son is a jazz drummer. He's always telling me I'm out of time, but I've been out of time all my life. I just don't admit it to him.
I hope he sums up listening to this today. That's all I'm going to say there, right?
That's right.
Yeah. But as I always say, it's a father's prerogative to be out of tune, right?
And great. I agree.
And then you look at the other side of the coin and say, I could do noise, but certainly I can't hope to do much jazz music. But yeah, I think also, well, jazz music always sometimes has to be look about our tune, our time anyway, because it gives it that edge sometimes anyway.
It does, and I think it goes with my character. I don't think I'm the kind of person who can fit into an organisation. I'm like Groucho Marx, you know. I don't want to be a member of any organisation that would have me. So I think it's good. I mean, my new music teacher is always telling me, well, you've got to first play it the way it is written. And I find that very difficult. I know what they mean, but it doesn't quite make sense in the real world.
Yeah. Was it Mark E. Smith that said something along the lines of before you can have to learn something, then you can play it bad, can't you? Or is it the way around? I can't remember now, to be honest with you. But yeah. But more is an opinion, just go for it. And then follow your heart, don't you, as I would say.
Yeah.
So yeah. So do you find it then, obviously, with you operating two different fields of your music and also your poetry, is it where you find that your brain's having to look at things in different ways when you're doing your poetry, for example? Does it cross over?
Well, I think that's right. I think we all come at situations and issues and tasks and challenges in immense different ways. You know, if you look at any kind of issue or matter, then there are a whole set of perceptions on it. There's not just one or two. So it's not binary. It's not this or that. And I think that's what gives us such great diversity as people. It enables us to interpret things in a manner, wild different ways. I mean, you only have to, you know, if you gave any of us a subject, a poem or a piece of music, we'd all interpret it differently, and it'd all be immensely interestingly, and such a variety, you know, it would be great, a great experiment to actually do.
Yeah, I think you've got the jazz sound to think about your writing there as well, because whenever I heard you read and I've read bits of your writing, I get the jazz feel in it sometimes, and it's, but writing itself is similar to jazz music, I think, in the fact that everything's open to interpretation, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And I think I try to impulse some rhythm into the reading to make it more musical, but to make it more interesting and nuanced. So it is, yeah, it's I think it's an important aspect to do. I'm always conscious that if I think I create something, and sometimes I will question that, you know, is what I write poetry? I don't know. I'll leave it to others. What I try to do is write something interesting, something that makes a comment, something which will pull in people, something which will be storytelling. And then I see that piece of work then as having its own life. And therefore I have to respect it. I have to try to deliver it as best I can so that it can go wherever it goes on its own and people can judge it or mark it or simply just enjoy it, which is what I hope they'll do.
Yeah, and that's a good point. It's a good point there, because certainly when I first started performing myself some years ago, I was strictly a poet, and the older I've got, I think this applies to you as well, is I've not let my actual creativity be restricted to one form nowadays. So I look at things, each piece is its own beast sometimes. And it's like, you never know where you start off, where it's leading sometimes. And I think that applies to you as well, to be honest with you, what I get the feeling.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Andy. And I think sometimes I look back on something, and we all must do this, and I think, who wrote that? I can't remember it being me, and I'm not quite sure how it came together or how the words fell onto the page, but they somehow do. And so I'm just grateful that sometimes it seems to work out and people seem to enjoy it.
Yeah. What led you onto the creative word scene then, or spoken word scene? Because I know you've been active for a bit, haven't you? So, but is what made you want to led you into that field?
I think I'd always wanted to express myself in some ways. And I think my leanings in life, I qualified as a counsellor some 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And that was an interesting travel for me, because when I went on the course, I was working in the legal profession at the time. And so I seen again as a bit of an oddity as to, you know, why is he here? What's he doing? But I found it very cathartic as an experience. It enabled me to get in touch with my inner feelings, if you like, and to deal with some matters and issues in my life. And I think all of us, you know, have a sensitivity to matters which are happening in the world at any time. And this gave me an opportunity to have a voice, because I think, despite the fact that we appear to be living in a democracy, sometimes we don't really have the opportunity to say something or speak. And I'm not attempting to campaign in my writing. I just want all of us, I think, to touch the human side, you know, to understand there is a perspective to this which is outside of pure politics, and it's related to the way we are as people.
Agreed completely with you there, mate. It's, I always think good writing on poetry, and particular poetry as well, is like you're showing, not telling. If you're telling, I think you're in danger of coming preaching sometimes. Your work's very, very good at the showing of it. You're telling what you want people to realise. You've done a few about Gaza, if my memory is correct, and which are beautiful pieces you've had at Speakeasy. You're going on about the reality of the situation, but not preaching to us. And that's very, very good writing.
Well, thank you for that. It's a compliment, which I graciously accept. It's great to know. It's great to know that, you know, it's they knit together. They make some kind of sense. And it's, as I say, it's not something which is in any way intended to change any views. And I've always wanted, again, probably because I've spent so many years in law and everyone goes, what is he talking about? You can get into that, you know, technical language, that canned. And I also wanted to try and break down barriers. Again, it's about communication.
Yeah,
I don't want people to have knitted furrows and go away and go, what was that all about? I want people to try and appreciate. I'm trying to communicate and listen back to people. I spent some years studying Buddhism.
Oh, and, did you?
Yeah, and so one of the aims I've always tried again to achieve is to try and break down, you know, to its essence some of the teaching of Buddhism to make them more practical for me.
Of course.
You know, communicate those to others when the situation arises.
I should have guessed that you when a few times I've met you, I always felt you've had a sort of peacefulness about you as a person, because I've done a lot of Zen when I was younger, certainly myself, and it gives you an inner calmness, I think. So, and do you think that's reflected into your work then, that being the case?
I hope it is. I would imagine it will be, although I may not be conscious of it.
Yeah, usual case, that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, brilliant. No, I get you completely, mate, with it. So, okay. Back to you. Back to your work then itself. Then, do you have any ideas? Oh no. Well, do this other question in a minute. How has your work since you've come onto the scene? If that's the right word, do you think your work's changed in direction since you went onto the scene properly? How's it developed?
Yeah. I've been probably on the scene twice. I was on the scene. Mm. Up till 2000, I remember doing readings at a national poetry festival in Brighton and Hove. I did some recitals at the Frog and Bucket. I did some over in Merseyside, Southport Way. I stopped around 2000, just other commitments came in and, you know, took over, as they do, that's life. So I've only just restarted. So I'm just getting back into the whole scene, which is terrifying, I have to admit. You know, going up on stage and standing up and thinking, is anybody going to like this or not? Or why am I here?
No, I can't relate to that.
It's interesting. It's particularly interesting. Has my style changed? When I look back to that time, I don't think in a major way it has. I suppose in, you know, life's events over that time have come in. And like you say, you know, situations which arise in the world where you think and feel, more importantly, I want to say something about them, that does change. And you'd hope that as a human being throughout life, you do kind of mature in some ways. But yeah. You'd have to ask others about that.
I agree with you. I had a 4-year gap, from about 2011 to 15 myself, really, when right. I was in a relationship that wasn't the best, shall we say. So, yeah, and when I came back in 15 myself, it was like I was terrified the first couple of times. Not a 20-year gap like you, and like I must have been. That must have been hard work, that, to come back after such a long gap. Did you find that when you started up again, you're like, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was thinking that and still do. So, and I think the other really good thing is, two things, I think. One is the way people have been welcoming. That has been, I really appreciated that. I really have. And the other one is the mix of ages, the mix of perspective and background. And that's been a real joy to listen to people, as I say, coming from a different angle, having a different understanding of a situation.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why it's been a pleasure having you at Speakeasy, because you do things in your way. It's very different angle that other people do. And when we have people there, like you've identified, we get people all ages, all backgrounds, and all kinds of different directions. It's a pleasure sometimes when you get to a good night, when you're sat there thinking, you just don't know what's coming next to you sometimes. Mm. That's what we're like that. We don't have a clue what's going from person to person sometimes. No, I agree with you. So do you have any ideas what direction you'd like your creativity to go next?
I'd like to continue because I am beginning to enjoy and lose some of the nerves in presenting. Sometimes I said, I think perhaps I don't do the poem the justice it deserves away from me. But I'm hoping that gaining confidence, maybe get something published. I did self-publish a small pamphlet over 20 years ago.
Wow.
Which was good, I think. Perhaps something of that nature I possibly could. But I have to say, I'm not fixated with publishing. If it happens, it happens, and that'd be great. And sometimes I wonder, you know, is what I write good enough for publication? We all must worry about that, I suppose, be concerned. Or is it better when it's spoken?
I think there's you're dead right with that. There's two ways of looking at it in that. And certainly, I've done a load of self-published books over the years, and I've had a couple that with publishers that fell through for various reasons. And what I have people say to me, they can see my acting background in my stuff sometimes when I'm reading it. So it's a bit of both, really, isn't it? So you've got to constantly ask yourself which is the best direction.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm, you know, pushing to one direction in terms of publication. If it happened, it happened. I'm pleased just to be back on the scene. You know, I think for me, I feel it's early days coming back. And so some of it is experimental. You know, what I may think might be well received, perhaps isn't. And some things I think won't be, perhaps are.
It's
an interesting journey. But that's life, I think, isn't it? That's the way life works.
I've had it before with poetry for now, and it's come the same for you as well, mate, with this. It's like, no matter what, if you're new or old, when you go on stage, a piece that might go down really well at one venue, you might walk away off stage afterwards thinking, well, I'm reading that one out again. You just don't know, do you? So, unpredictability of anything, yeah. Do you think you'd ever bring UG music on stage with you, or is that not going to happen, do you think, with your poetry?
I don't know is the answer. I tried it out on the recording I made because I wanted to give it some a blues background. I suppose, again, it'd have to be the right setting and the right poem. And maybe think about enlarging that so it's not just a solo saxophone, but maybe other music accompanying.
Yeah. I've always been in it, definitely, because love doing poetry, love spoken word, but it can be black and white or grayscale system. Some music, I'm always the opinion. And that's why I loved it when you did the pieces in the Christmas album. His saxophone really added a bit of colour to the piece, definitely went out. And it was like, I didn't know you played saxophone at that time. And it was absolutely, it really stunned me in a beautiful way. So yeah, definitely. Right, anyway, okay, we'll let you tell people how people can find out more about you and to wrap up part one then. So if people want to get hold of you, where do you recommend they go?
I do have a slot on Instagram, and it's entitled Between This Thought and That, and it has a very uncomplimentary head shot of me. Well, there you go. You have to put up with some things in life, don't you?
As I would say, hey-ho.
Hey-ho, absolutely. And I suppose Gmail, you know.
Yeah,
nothing too offensive.
Yeah, I can relate to that one, mate, definitely. So I'll put your email address at the bottom as well with your Instagram page, definitely, mate. Okay.
Thank you.
That's part one, guys and girls. Hang around, because Danny is an exceptionally good poet, and I'm not bluffing her. He's a great guy, great poet. So see you all in 2 months.
Spoken, mate.
Hey, guys, Andy N, the amazing Danny McLaughlin. Less of me, more of you. Straight over to Danny. He's going to do four pieces for us. Take it away, Matt.
This is a piece which relates to a poem written by Alfred Alaria, the Palestinian poet who sadly died recently in the conflict in Palestine. He wrote a poem entitled If I Should Die, and it related to kite flying in Gaza in Palestine, which is a very popular pastime. And he referred to the kites as being like angels as they flew and floated in the sky. And he asked that if he should die, then attach long white strings to the kites so that children could pull the kites and they would resemble angels' wings. And that would give the children hope. I wanted to write a poem to salute the poet, but also I wanted to emphasize the needless early deaths of children in Palestine and in other areas, and to emphasize the need for human love and the continuation of life itself. So this poem is simply entitled A Prayer. The loss inflicted that fateful night, a shallow breath, a dimming light. Now some they say, the God's with you, but where was he to pull you through? And I've no use for otherworldly things, halos, harps, or angels' wings. I just want those human strings to hold you close for the joy love brings. Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff that, Danny. Beautiful. You can see the Buddhist in you in that one straight away there. She's just everything about love and peace. Yeah, I agree with you. So where you've got to look at situations like that, because I've got friends that are half Palestine, and I've got some Israeli as well, and they're all, the common people like us are the sickened by the whole thing on it. And it's,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's why I know it's, you know, I agree completely on that one, mate. So excellent stuff. Right. That's me. More of you. That's my catchphrase. Over to you, mate, for piece number two.
This is a poem entitled Stargazing. The Middle East poet Nizami Ganjavi wrote, in the Book of Life, every page has two sides. We fill up our side with plans, hopes, and wishes. But providence writes on the other side, and what it ordains is seldom our goal. Ganjavi wrote the narrative poem, Layla and Majnun, in 1188. It's about two people separated by society and family, and it's considered to be the Romeo and Juliet of the East. And it inspired Eric Clapton to write his hit, Layla. The poem, Stargazing, is based upon a few true moments spent with my son, aged 3, shortly after his mum had sadly passed, stargazing. Standing in the garden with my son, now aged 3, as the sun's center sinks beneath the horizon, and in the twilight, the brightest stars become clearly visible. I raise my left arm and extending my index finger, point up at the moon. In a lost attempt to reassure, I say, that's where your mom is. See her shining face, her soft smile, as she gazes down upon you. But he's far too smart for his age, and has already borne witness to the damage this life may inflict. The distance between the truth and my lie is greater than the light years between the moon and the earth. But we pretend. Keep on stirring a little longer, a little too long. I lower my arm, place my hand upon his head. I cherish this child. I want to save him from any more loss or grief in his whole life. Yet I know the distance between my wish and even some form of benign providence extends far beyond the mass of the universe. Thank you.
Wonderful stuff. Again, that's a really deep piece, that one, actually, as well. So tell us about what made you want to write that piece then.
My son now is 18 in next month in March.
Wow.
And I think I was thinking about the speed in which that growth has happened. So, you know, because of the events that happened to him, we obviously, like most parents and children, are very close, and probably closer because of those events. So it brought back to mind some of these matters. You know, we all faced loss in our life, which is sad. And the emotional distance is not the same as the distance in years. So some of these events are still very clear in my mind. So I look at him and I see him at the age of three still. Oh, but I look at him now and I think, yeah, I think, wow, you know, look at the distance he's travelled.
Well, then I was telling you off camera before, I was out with my sister's 50th birthday due yesterday. And her son, my nephew, he's 16 now, just turned 16. And it's, you look back at it, they just seem to grow up so quickly, don't they, as well? Like my nephew's up to about, people are wondering, I just put my hair, he's about 5'10 now, and only an inch smaller than me. And I just saw it yesterday, he's absolutely started to really fill out. And your son will be the same as well, won't it? Like, age thing seems, it seems to creep up when you just don't expect it sometimes.
I've spent my whole life, Andy, looking down upon him until the last 12 months. Now I spend my time looking up at him.
Oh, we had it on, you know, we had lockdown, obviously, a couple of years ago. I didn't see my nephew for about close to 10 months, basically. And we went over that Christmas after lockdown and got left down with it. And I remember that because he opened the front door and let me and Amanda in. And he was like, I was looking up and thinking, where have you come? He's shot up about 7 inches in a year, and he does have to get growth spurts, don't they?
They do.
And it's incredible. Anyway, listen, mate, we'll end up talking rubbish, me and you all day. I know what I'm like, and I know what you're like. So, less of me, more of you. Give us your next piece, mate.
Right, this next poem is entitled Beginner's Mind. It's based on the Buddhist concept, Beginner's Mind. And the idea behind this concept is to keep the sense of wonder in life alive, is to come at each experience as if it's the first time we've experienced whatever it is we're doing. And the aim is to help us to learn the fact that wherever we come to in life, any situation, it is never the same situation. Things have changed. Our mood may be different. The weather may be different. People we're with. We may come in joy, we may come in sorrow. Well, the whole purpose of Beginner's Mind is that hopefully we will learn from the experience, no matter what. So this is my stripping away to its essence, that concept of Beginner's Mind. A skein of Canada geese rise beyond the bank, soaring high, crisscrossing the horizon. The day grows light and warm, soon to become dark and cold. Such is the order of things. I wade into this same old river, yet never the same water. The water flows on, weaving a timeless pattern. Whatever God you may believe that to be, knows I've been privileged enough to witness this scene as light and shade have danced on the distant hills. When the meadow lies lush and green, expectant with life. When the earth has been powder painted white with the first snowfall of winter. I have come at times in deep despondency, full of foreboding. Or at other times, filled with the exuberance of life. And I tell you truly, I have never been in the same place twice. Thank you.
Yeah. Really, that one really got me, and I must admit to you, Danny. So I'm always of the opinion, you're right. Every day you get up, no day's the same. Whether you go past that place every day or you never go there again, it's something different, isn't it, in life all the time? It's because you're constantly moving forward, aren't we? So, yeah, that really got me, that one, mate. So what made you want to write that piece?
Again, through the learning of or studying Buddhism. I was brought up Catholic, so some of the studying seemed to me to be not dissimilar in the way we were being taught it. You know, it's, you know, you're not quite good enough at meditation, but if you keep going and keep practicing, you'll soon get to Nirvana or whatever that it may be. And then I listened to a a Buddhist monk say one day, well, nirvana is happiness, it's now. You know, it's not a step ladder, it's not waiting for this afterlife. And I wrote a poem about my upbringing called Sin and Shame, which started with lines, I was raised on sin and shame, from all earthly pleasures to refrain. So that's what I understood. And so it struck me that the interpretation perhaps of beginner's mind wasn't what I was either seeking or understanding. It was something about it's here now, make of it what we can.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with you completely, mate, with that. Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. So, yeah, it does. It makes sense, that. Right, and listen, conscious of the time for you, mate, I want you to get your fourth piece in for us. The big finale, Danny, okay? Take it away, mate.
Okay, so this is my final one. This is a simple, short poem called Being. In your being, carry the dust of each experience, the scent of love, and the vanquishment of many agonies. In your imagination, carry a field of possibilities, the emblazoned colour of poppies. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like the fact there, because it's such a short little piece. It's like, I think sometimes it's good you're wrapping up things with a short one. You give people a little thought, take away. Or you've come to the idea is you're pulling the carpet out under people's feet before they have time to think about it. Was that always going to be a very short piece for you, though?
Yeah, it was. It was, for this particular purpose, I chose it because it's a kind of nice way, I think, for me to sign off and say, whoever's listening, thank you for listening. And just something to take away for yourself.
Yeah, so, no, definitely.
Nothing which, you know, I didn't want something which was too involved. I wanted something which just said, yeah, wishing you the best.
Yeah, you know, I've got that straight. No, it's beautiful stuff, mate. Absolutely great stuff, mate, indeed. So, I want to thank you today, Danny. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Absolute pleasure. So, hang around, mate. I need to quit early off the microphone anyway. But thanks again, everybody. Then I said, Danny McLaughlin is brilliant. Come and see him at Speakeasy or anywhere else he may read. That's all I'm going to say there. Well, thank you, mate. So, as Don Callis over at AEW Wrestling says, stay safe and stay over. And we will see you all next time.
Spoken, mate.